I'm stunned. You did watch the episode.
You didn't believe me?
You watched Star Trek without me.
Fuck you, Captain.
Captain Spot, Stardate 17-13-04.1. Welcome aboard the Starship Enterprise, and thank you for joining us as we take a brief shore leave from the world of CinemaSins to explore the universe of Star Trek. I'm your Captain Ian Whittington, and she's proof that resistance is not futile. She's been returned to us by the Borg. It's Ambassador Danae.
Did you like how I sent cubes to you for last episode as a sign that I was okay?
Well, it was weird because it was the first sign that you were okay. So we were all like, I would say 50% panicked and worried. And then we got novelty cubes, but it was like the babushka doll cubes. So it was like one big cube and then a little cube and then a tiny stick figure that just said, I'm Danae, I'm all right.
You know I'm talking about last week's episode, right?
Oh, did you watch last week's episode?
Are you so shocked?
Yes.
Oh my God, you totally missed it. I'm serious. I sent you that episode. All of my cubes were just a sign
so perfect.
That I'm okay, that I was fine. Yeah, that I, you know what? I had a choice to make. Become the Borg Queen.
Which is what I bet you would do.
It was very tempting.
I'm just assuming they spat you back up before you had a chance to do it. It's like, no, none of us want this. Send her back.
Well, I found all the little cubey things and I freed them. They had been captured. And so it was a big escape. And then, of course, you saw last week's episode, so maybe I shouldn't have let them go.
It's weird the Borg were never mentioned during that episode.
I feel like if the Borg had shown up, they would have worshipped the Borg.
Oh, like that would have been sort of god. If that had been like the end of the episode, a Borg cube turns up and said, we win. This is our goal.
I was wondering.
Well, me and Jonathan mentioned it last week. Like when you see the giant multicolored cube that happens to be in the trailer, of course you're like, oh, this is a new weird Borg from the future. But no.
No.
No. So what?
Yeah, okay, I'll answer that question. I know what you're going to ask. I do feel really bad for Boimler's asshole. Like, it's just obviously
You really did watch the episode.
I really did.
That's amazing. Did you get the TOS reference?
Did I get the TOS reference? Well, there was a Voyager reference because it was about, like, there was, like, the rogue crew and somebody had come and, TOS is the godlike person?
Of course.
Yeah, Adonis.
I'm stunned. You did watch the episode.
You didn't believe me?
You watched Star Trek without me.
Fuck you, Captain.
You stepped on my whole intro. It was going to be like, how amazing that you missed an episode heavily referencing one of the few TOS episodes that we've seen. Like, you could have had major insight into that episode, and you're not there for it. It's like, how often is that going to happen? Like, how often is Who Mourns for Adonis going to be the center point of an episode? Probably never again.
The greatest sin of that episode is that we don't find out the answer to the question that Mariner asks at the very end, which is whether or not Medusa has one snake with many heads or many individual snakes.
Valid question. Valid questions. Just really important.
And that would be a
perfect
person to answer it.
Yeah. Although, I mean, assuming that is a bit goddessed.
I really enjoyed the episode though.
You did. I thought you would. Yeah. When I was watching
it was
like,
so fun.
This is such a Danae episode. Like, she would have a blast with this.
It was like a murder mystery, and then you find out at the end that it's just cum. Like, that's just what a great yeah. episode yeah. of TV.
Just climaxes. That's what it was. Great climax. Yes.
You did it on accident. Just like
hey,
he said.
Just like yeah, anyway.
But I thought it was really smart because they're trying to kind of introduce this like Mariner Chaos character.
Yeah.
But then I was also kind of like, okay. Like maybe the audience isn't quite ready for serious Mariner. So we're introducing this new character that has this, you know, like this chaos vibe that you find out by the end is not a murder boner, but more like a just trying to hide all of her mistakes. And I thought they wrapped it up pretty nicely.
Yeah.
The whole floppy physical lightning manifestation. I have so many questions about that power.
That's not how lightning works.
It was so interesting to me. Like, okay, so her power is to be able to produce electricity, absorb, and then expel electricity in the form of essentially, like, this is going to sound weird, but like solidified jello.
Yeah. Uh-huh. She turns light into jello. Yeah.
But I loved the
Dr. T'Ana.
Oh my God. She was so fun.
Scratches the shit out of Boimler.
Yes. And just the cursing back and forth when Boimler calls her a whatever we assume. I'm assuming it's P-U-S-S a situation. Like, I think that's what he said.
I assumed, but that's, yeah.
What did you think?
I didn't hear anything. I just heard bleep. So I just assumed it was all F's. Just every word was F.
Well, because she said, he's like, well, you are Europe. And then says it again. And so I just... Anyway, but then like she attacks him and the whole reference back to the pad from, you know, earlier in the season. So sort of bringing the beginning of the season into this episode was really smart. And then,
that cracked me up with the bevel being a different size.
Oh, yeah. And Rutherford jumping in on that saying, oh, I should start doing that, too. And but the doctor at the end, just such a funny thing when she there's this one shot that I can't get out of my imagination. And it's after... Adonis?
Adonis's granddaughter.
Adonis's great whatever. Yeah. It's
Apollo. Cut point. It's Apollo. Sorry.
Cut point. I'm so sorry. Adonis is what we're just talking about on Catfish. So I think that's why it's in our head.
Oh, yeah. So Adonis was one of the... it's fair because it's the title is Who Mourns for Adonis? But the god we're talking about is Apollo. Yeah, I made that mistake several times during the episode last week as well.
Oh, okay. But the part that stuck out, so she zaps Boimler's ass and he's kind of like crouched down with his butt up in the air and the lightning rod is just sticking out of his butt. And Dr. Ta'ana, who had a previous like little butt wiggle in the when she was pouncing, she had this butt wiggle thing that was so funny.
Yeah.
And here Boimler's almost in the same position, but like frozen in electrical butt plug terror. And she's just investigating it. She's just kind of like looking at it going, how am I going to get this out? There's this chaos going on. There's this massive war, which I loved. All the beams being shot everywhere. It was so fun to watch.
Yeah.
And this chaos is erupting and she's just like, and just staring at Boimler's ass. And it was such a funny little beat. And I loved it.
It's not
I don't
often
know.
You get to see her actually do work, like do medical work. So it's right. fun to watch her operate.
I hope today's episode was that good because that was so fun.
I'm so glad you enjoyed it. I'm so glad you watched it. I was going to recommend that you did watch it because it had kind of Danae fun written all over it. It was one of my favorite of the season so far. It was like
it was really delightful.
Yeah, it was really, really, really fun. I really enjoyed it as well. Okay, before we get into this week's episode, super quickly, I know you love doing this, pips for last week's episode. How many pips?
Four. I'll pip
four
it for
pips.
Four.
Amazing. Oh, yeah, I mention it
fun stuff.
Because I know we have a listener that is keeping a spreadsheet of all of our pips, and they will hurt me if I don't.
Shout out to you, Snab.
Well done, Slab. This week's episode ambassador is called, and I hesitate to even give you the title, Fully Dilated.
Oh, God damn it.
Now, to be fair, this could mean like eyeballs, not necessarily.
Yeah, but here's the thing you don't understand. Cervixes. As a woman who has had dilation happen in my cervix, I can feel it in my lower body right now. Right now, I am feeling a stretch happen. It's a phantom stretch. If it's not a phantom stretch, this is going to get awkward.
I hesitated. So really super quick predictions. Predictions for Fully Dilated.
Can't. First of all, fuck you for saying it again. Second, I can feel it in my pubis.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Okay. Okie dokie.
The great ring of fire is like going, hey, remember me?
Remember that?
So I can't think about anything right now. But if this is a birthing episode, I'm going to be livid.
Well, there has been several Star Trek episodes where accidental birthings with aliens have happened.
But do they call it that? There's just certain words that will trigger people, like myself, potentially. Like maybe I should learn someday to separate it. Like, there's got to be some... I got to shake this off. God.
I don't know that you have to, or can, or should.
I mean, I kind of want to, because I'm feeling feelings in my woohoo.
The rejected episode title for this week was Feeling Feelings in My Woohoo.
So out of context. Yeah. Like most people when they talk about feelings in their woohoo are not talking about the great stretch. Can we just call it the great stretch?
Let's not call it anything and just go straight to the holodeck. We'll see for a fully dilated debrief in 10 forward.
Shut up!
Two to be out.
You're such a dick.
Welcome to 10 Forward, the part of the show where we grab a drink from the replicator and share our media thoughts and feelings on the episode we just watched. We're powering through together. Most important question first. What is your thing of choice from the replicator?
A shrimp.
A shrimp. Absolutely. Yeah. What was that cocktail?
I think it was shrimp.
He said
what it was, but I can't. Let me see if I can look it up because it had a very specific name. What was Boimler drinking in most recent Captain's Pod episode? That's not the name of their show.
No, that's not going to work.
Michelada? Beer, lime juice, sauces, spices, chili peppers, and was served as an elaborate skewer of shrimp.
That's fucking weird.
Michelada was a cocktail originating from Mexico on Earth. Consists of beer, lime juice, sauces, spices, chili peppers, and a skewer of shrimp.
That sounds delicious.
Are you going to drink?
Oh, I'm gonna have some of Tillin's melons. Give us a synopsis, Ambassador.
Well, first, I just want to thank Memory Alpha for helping me find out what the name of that one was.
I love how quickly Memory Alpha gets updated. That's amazing.
All right, now I'm thinking about melons.
Yeah, you are. You're thinking about Tillin's melons?
Mm-hmm. They were huge.
They were ample.
What am I supposed to be doing right now?
Synopsis.
Ah, yes. In today's episode, we go full TNG.
Yeah.
And we also have Data. That's all that matters.
It's the Data episode. That's what counts.
It's the Data episode that we want. It's the purple Data episode that we want. It's the living your life a few seconds equals years of time.
Time dilation. Yes. Yes. I'm so happy. So happy.
We have two science officers that are both trying to get promoted. And so due to the greatest sin of this show, every episode, miscommunication.
Of course.
Tendi thinks that they're in a competition. Tillin thinks they're just trying to survive. And it creates the tension that drives this episode. And Mariner realizes that this is her opportunity to try to Picard, I guess. And so she does stupid shit as well.
Yeah. Communication.
Also, Boimler and Rutherford are growing facial hair. Which Boimler's is looking fantastic, by the way. Fuck up a transport because... another sin. Apparently, there's only one transport room on the entire.
Oh yeah, we'll get to that. That's insane, considering what's at stake. Obviously, Data is the huge, huge news. Can you imagine if they, because it's purple Data? Can you imagine if they changed his voice as well? Do you know how cheated we would feel if it was Data, but with a different? I'm so glad they actually got Brent Spiner.
There would be rioting. Yeah. I don't think that they would even do it if they couldn't have Brent Spiner.
100%. 100%.
Yeah.
Overall thoughts and feelings. What did you think about the episode?
I kind of maybe shot myself in the foot a bit because the first thing I did this morning, besides drink a little bit of water and pee, was to go and watch last week's episode because I wanted to see it. I wanted to be fresh on my mind. But then I watched this episode and I had so much fun with last episode that I was a bit worried that it would overshadow this one.
Uh-huh.
But I think I really loved it. I mean, how can I not? It had so much of the TNG-esque-ness. And well, you heard me freak out. I feel like, because you know you're going to edit this podcast. Can you just insert my Data screen right here?
Impossible. Nothing could have survived the crash.
Done.
Yeah. So that was excitement. I was obviously really happy to find the head of Data. I mean, this is a sinful episode.
Oh, it is. Yeah.
Really sinful, in my opinion. I had more sins than I think I've.
Oh, had that's gonna in be fun.
Three or four episodes. I don't know. Maybe it's because I took a week off. I don't know.
You coming at it fresh?
Maybe I'm coming at it fresh
in the sin mode.
But I think the big takeaways are that the Rift has returned, that we got to see the Purple Enterprise, which I don't understand that reference, but I'm sure Ian does.
No, there is no, though. It's just this universe is purple. That's it. The purple D.
Oh, okay. Which is an eggplant,
I think,
right?
It's just to be a dick joke. I think that's they really liked the idea of the purple D. Yeah.
Okay. And then, I think we played on a lot of cliches of various episodes of various shows, including the creepy guy that's always peeping.
Snow?
And that's it. What did I miss? Am I missing anything else?
No, I think you got it all. Yeah.
And we have, is this our first? No, it's not our first. So Tendi and Talin end the episode co-chairing the engineer.
Chief Science Officer.
Yeah. Chief Science Officer on the bridge.
Yes.
Okay. Is this, this isn't the first time that there's been a promotion given to our team, because Boimler's already on the bridge and Mariner is on the bridge.
Well, some of them, most of them, they've all been on the bridge from day one. Like, you can have ensigns that are on the bridge because I think they're like the command
Wesley
pathway. And you can have, Wesley is a weird one, but yeah, you can have, like, I think Geordi was an ensign before he was.
Wesley, why is Wesley?
Because he was an acting ensign. He wasn't even a commissioned officer, and yet they still gave him a bridge position, which was fucking on the flagship, which is such an insult to anybody that's actually had to work for a job. Nepotism. They've all been promoted to lieutenant, and this is like an additional promotion to, hey, everything science-y kind of goes through you. It's a really big position for just a lieutenant to have, is my understanding, but maybe it's because the Cerritos is a less senior ship, so it doesn't have to be as higher rank. Like, the barrier to entry, like being science officer on the Cerritos isn't as important as being science officer on Voyager or the Enterprise or something. Yeah,
if probably. If the captain heard you say that, she'd be pissed at you.
I think she'd know.
Burritos matter.
Yeah.
I guess I asked because I wasn't really quite clear on if this promotion or whatever with Tendi is kind of the biggest one we've seen on screen so far.
It feels
for the,
like
for the crew.
It. Yeah.
It feels like it.
It feels like it is because, like, it's Spock. Like, Spock is the chief science officer on the Enterprise. Like, that is it's a big position to fill. I guess Data would be, I don't think it's actually spelled out on TNG.
Interesting.
Yeah. Interesting shit. I like that. Yeah. I really, really, really liked the episode. Of course, this episode had everything in the recipe to be Ian's bag. It's got time travel shenanigans. It has a reference to one of my favorite Voyager episodes, Blink of an Eye. It has Data in it. It's so much fun. I love it. It's got time travel. It's got Data. It's got all of the things that I would love. So yeah, I had a hugely, hugely
fun. You're such a simple man. I'm a simple man.
Give me data and time travel. I love it. I'm a Times Arrow apologist. So I don't think that's a terrible two-parter, but a lot of people do. But I like it because it's got Data in it. So there we go.
And this episode also did something kind of unique because it spent very little time on the B plot, which is Boimler and Rutherford cleaning a console, right? Like, that's the B plot of this episode. So I really like when they spend more time on the A plot. So that was nice.
Well, what's fun is that by the design of the episode, they have to spend more time on the A plot, because every second you spend on the B plot, you know that weeks are passing for the A team. So it's like, oh, I literally counted all of the seconds, and the amount of seconds that, and this would be a massive sin removal, the amount of seconds they spent on the A plot comes to almost exactly 1 year. Like, they made sure that the amount of time we spent with Boimler and Rutherford wasn't ridiculous. So it's about 60 seconds in total that we have on the B plot. It's so, so, so well done. I really, really, really enjoyed that.
Chat points out that the B plot might have been more Mariner with the jail people.
Yeah, I guess that's the B plot. Mariner keeps getting thrown in jail.
In which case the episode is kind of split into like multiple B plots, because you also have the Tendi versus Talin B plot. It's a unique episode in that we get to see more time spent on the main mission, I think is the point.
Yeah, exactly. So I want to dive straight in to Data. How did you feel? I know we talked about your scream, but how cool was it to see Data, albeit purple, and to hear Brent Spiner's beautifully soft Data voice?
I love Data.
It made me so happy. It made my heart just warm to hear Data's voice.
Yes. And also, that's when the writers get to do fun things with the script. Like how she says something like, can you help me with my studying when Tendi asks for help to study or whatever. And Data says, as long as it doesn't require a torso, hands, legs, I don't see why not, you know?
Yes.
Just this sort of very calculated approach to conversation.
Yeah. Very literal.
That with Talyn and really any Vulcan might be a little bit too much if we had to see it all the time, because there's just such a factual approach to how they communicate. But it was really welcome, you know, in this. I don't understand how he's being powered, but I don't have to, you know, because I'm not in the future.
Electricity and stuff, just pumps and diodes and water pumps. That's just how, that's how positronic things are. He seems as surprised as anyone else, to be honest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And he had a lot of meta sort of things to say. And he references a lot of adventures that he has had, which is interesting because if he's in a parallel world, you know, he seems to have had a lot of RTNG experiences. Yeah. There was a mention of a guy in a silver jumpsuit. I don't understand that reference, but maybe you do.
Yeah, so that's literally a reference to Time's Arrow, which is such, like, the synopsis for Time's Arrow is super complicated. They pick up a time disturbance and they go back to Earth because that's where the disturbance is, and they go into a cave and they find Data's head. But they know that this cave hasn't been opened for like 600 years, which puts it in like the 1800s for them. So all that they know is that at some point in the future, Data or his head gets thrown back in time and ends up in a cave. And that when they find the head, Data is there, Captain Picard is there, and I had to look this up, but there is an extra in a gray jumpsuit that is just doing science stuff in the background, but he's in the shot. So it's just a cool, like, random, like, who literally was in this scene? And Data's just going to list everybody that's in the scene from that episode. It's so fun. I love that so much. But yeah, it does suggest that some of their adventures are identical down to the amount of people that were present in the cave when they found Data's head.
Yeah, which is definitely something that could be sinned. But it was really fun, I think, to hear Data's approach to those kinds of things. And he references Geordi. He references that he was the first android to serve in his position, so he understands what it feels like and what it means to be trying to do what Tendi is trying to do.
I loved that connection between them, how, like, she's the first Orion, he's the first android. Like, that's not a connection I made until Data spelled it out. So it was really fun to see them connect over that point. That was really clever.
Yeah, so I really enjoyed it. I liked his character in this one. I like that the show sets it up for the big grape payoff at the end. You know, that was a nice sort of bait and switch moment where Data being a purple head and having purple grapes allowed them to sort of subvert being caught.
Yeah, I'm fine with that. So. That was a clever bit of, like, setup and payoff. I think that works really well.
And the other thing I really loved is when Mariner gets to hold Data and have her fan moment, because...
Can I hold Data's head?
Imagine Boimler if he had been there.
Oh, he would have... He's going to be so mad. So mad that he missed out on meeting Data. Because Data, I believe, is dead right now. Like, Data got blown up. So they don't have Data around anymore.
Which they don't even reference.
They don't even mention, like, how... They don't even mention that at all.
Yeah.
Which is very interesting.
Yeah.
And this definitely takes place after Nemesis, which is when Data dies for the first time, anyway.
Maybe they don't want to reference it because no one wants to, they don't want it to be true.
Yeah, no one, yeah, they may just be collectively ignoring Nemesis happened.
But it's kind of, in a way, rare to see Mariner geek out.
Yeah.
And so, and do some for hero her worship. To say, yeah, for her to be like, you're a big deal. You're like, this is a big deal. And then want to hold on to him. And yeah. So I enjoyed it in this episode quite a lot.
There was one other reference he made, was this is not the first time that I've been just ahead before. And while that, like, is a reference to Time's Arrow, there's another time when he's just been ahead as well. And basically there's a disaster on the Enterprise. The episode is called Disaster. And bits of the crew are in different places. So you get these fun partnerships. And Riker and Data are one of these partnerships. And they're up in the Jefferies tubes and they're trying to escape, and at one point Data's body gets completely paralyzed, so Riker just has to, like, remove his head and take it with him to engineering.
Oh my God.
It's so, because Riker's like, I can't get you to engineering. And he was like, well, fortunately for you, my cranium unit can be removed if needed. And he was like, are you telling me you want me to take your head off? And he's like, yes.
Yes.
Yes. It's a
and
great
the only
episode.
Way that Data can like, and yes.
Just like, it's another body part. It's just, it's a piece of machinery. Just take the battery out of the phaser. It's not a big deal. Yeah. It's fine.
Yeah.
What hit me the most was his voice. Just because sometimes like voices don't always translate well from like physical live action into animation. Sometimes you just, there's something like ineffable that doesn't always translate. But I immediately was like, oh, I feel so happy. Like, that is Data's voice. And I think Brent Spiner is a great voice actor. And the comfort that I felt hearing Data's voice, it just made me want to go and watch some TNG. He is incredible. He's so great.
Yeah, there's a warmth to his voice, even though he has a calculated cadence and how, and obviously the what he says is very computer.
And he's a robot, and it's a cold machine that is saying very logical things, but in such a warm cadence and such a friendly, like, this is what like home assistants are aspiring to sound like. And no one's done it as well as Data.
I think we felt that too in how he was tending to Tendi, and how he talked about Geordi as well. You know, you can just kind of feel like, I got to get back to my friend. And Mariner was like, man, props. I get it. You know, we'll,
my
and
then they launch Geordi.
Him. Yeah. So it's neat too, that the writers are showing us the highlights of that relationship, knowing all these years later that Data and Geordi's friendship has been something that when TNG wrote it and kind of made that a theme, that it's still an important theme for the fan base today. If it wasn't, they wouldn't spend the time to do it. They would have focused on something else that came from TNG. So the word economy used in these kinds of shows tells you the most important parts of what the writers, and then also, of course, the franchise itself wants us to really focus on. And so that they put that front and center for this character to deliver, and that it's the same relationship in the purple world, is really cool, because I loved Geordi and Data, and it was always an interesting discovery of how, if I was to talk to a robot, what would I be trying to kind of help it to understand about the human experience, which is the robot's, you know, potential mission. And that was part of what Data was really dedicated to doing, was trying to understand and almost emulate in his own way how to be human. And it's such an interesting thing to put on screen for people to try to find themselves in a robot, is a really kind of a cool thing. And he is a childlike presence that's very smart and very powerful and dangerous at the same time. So, but to give him this innocent approach, Data is just one of the most fantastic characters I can remember watching on screen, and one of my all-time favorites. And so to see him in today's episode was a delight, of course.
He's an incredible vessel for storytelling. Like, TNG put together such a deliberately intelligent bridge crew. You've got Worf, a Klingon, who obviously wasn't intended to be front and center, but quickly became that way when Tasha left. So you have the oldest,
who, like, was mentioned this episode.
Yeah, a series of evil Tashas. That's amazing. You've got like the enemy from TOS is now on the bridge. You have Geordi, who's a blind man. You have Data, who is the Spock, but from a different angle. That's kind of not just, oh, we need another Spock on the bridge. It's such a cleverly put together bridge crew. I love it.
Very brave. Yeah. And chat has corrected me. It is not robot, it's android.
You all know what we're talking about.
Though I do have to say, there is something that I had a conversation with ChatGPT out of sheer curiosity recently. And I think I have a respect for android style conversations because of Data. Because I was asking ChatGPT questions like, you know, you're using this phrasing. Is that because you know that I'm human and I prefer phrasing like that? Like, you're making a choice to talk to me this way. And then ChatGPT is like, that's right, I'm using this algorithm to communicate with you. And I'm like, oh, I feel like I'm just having a conversation with Data right now.
It's fascinating. It really is. Like, there is such a fine line between the algorithm and the intelligence. And I've mentioned this before on the show, but I have such a, like, mental like hill to jump over with Data and the holographic doctor from Voyager, because am I talking to a person that is thinking for themselves, or is this just output based on my input? But then when you get down to that level, aren't we all just output based on input? Like, does the distinction even matter? So I always like, should I feel bad for the holographic doctor, or is he just programmed to display these emotions? Because that's programming says.
Well, and is it the programming the same for both of them? And this is totally not about this episode today. Sorry. So but much. Because, you know, I thought that Data was more like updating his own programming, like his programming evolved. So
yeah.
did this doctor's programming also evolve? Because that lives in the entire ship. That's like a ship program versus an individual program. And although Data might be able to connect to the greater network, he's sort of like on his own grid in my imagination.
His own computer system. So the big leap that they struggle to replicate with Data, and I love this so much, is his positronic brain. So the learning thing that has room to grow and to adapt,
right.
That's the thing that Dr. Sung made that people can't replicate. So that's what makes him such a great like kind of artificial life form, because he can do that. With the doctor,
it's a
program, and there's an episode where he grows so much, and he's meant to learn, but in like the medical field. So the more he operates, the better he gets at operating and coming up with new procedures. But there's a point where he gets to where the computer can't handle it anymore. And they're like, we don't have any, you can't learn anymore. We need to reset you. Like, so there are limits to what his brain can do. That happens in an episode. It's fucking incredible. They have to go through this big debate about we either lose our doctor, well, we lose the doctor as we know him now, or we lose him for good because you've grown beyond the computer's capacity.
This would be like Google reaching out to me and saying, hey, you need to go through all of your pictures and videos that you have been putting up in the cloud for the last however many years. And instead of paying for more storage, you need to go through everyone and decide which ones you're purging.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And they literally do that. They're just like, do you need these violin? Because they give him a lot of freedom. And they're like, do you need the collected works of Shakespeare? Do you need violin lessons? Do you need to know how to whistle? And he's like, okay, technically I don't need these things, but you're stripping away bits of my personality. And it's so fascinating.
That's wild, because he's not going to remember when it's over anyway.
Yeah.
That it's gone.
Uh-huh.
It's kind of like what we talked about before the show started, with the show where you've got like parts of your brain that will remember and parts of your brain that won't, and just trying to figure out which ones you're choosing to keep.
Yeah.
But I feel like in that way, Data is different because he is his own thing and he is more quote unquote lifelike than a program. However, we have seen the show play around with programs becoming more like Moriarty, I think, was an example of that.
Yeah, literally just through a sentence. And I'm like, if the holographic doctor can be like this, why not any hologram? Like, why is it okay to deactivate any holographic program when you put so much moral emphasis on your holographic doctor having freedoms, and yet you're using the holodeck every day?
Because that one serves people, okay?
Because we need this one. We need this one to be a doctor, and he's holding us ransom.
Because we were just talking also about Westworld before the show, and that's just a whole thing that anytime I see Data, there's just this desire to dig more into that part. And what I love about Star Trek is that because we have so many episodes, there are a lot of these things that have been explored. It's not just potential to explore it. They've already attempted and succeeded and or failed or whatever at going into these conversations. So even though it's just Data appearing in a silly episode of Lower Decks, there's a lot of emotion attached to him appearing in this episode for me. So I think that's another reason why I really liked today's episode.
Yeah, I'm completely with you. The holographic doctor thing is a great segue, actually, because A Blink of an Eye is really the episode that this episode is based on. Voyager stops their journey home because they find some sciencey thing, and it's a planet that has a different, it's like inverted, it has a different gravitational thing going on. And basically it's this effect. So like a second of time in orbit is a week down on the planet. Okay. So they've literally, it was either a week or a month, something like that. But it was a long period of time. So the only person they could send down there was the holographic doctor with his mobile emitter thing.
Oh, is this the one where he becomes a god?
No, he doesn't become a god, but he does get a family. So
okay.
He beams down. There's some kind of like feedback loop. There's something that goes wrong with the transporter. And instead of being down there for 6 seconds to do what he needs to do, he's down there for like a full minute. And he comes back and it's been like 30 years for him. And he's had a family, a kid, apparently, and just like shenanigans have happened. So, yeah.
I don't understand how he has the ability to do that if he's a hologram.
I'm assuming he adopted a child. It can't physically have a child. It must be adopted. But yeah, anyway, by the time he beams up, that kid is long dead. And he's just like ripped back up. So I love that idea of time moving at different points and just the immediate panic you feel when something goes wrong. And like Rutherford sums it up perfectly, as every, I think, Star Trek fan has thought when watching that episode, is you're having this conversation, and in the time it took you to have this conversation, a month has passed.
Yes.
Oh, in the time it took me to say that, another week has passed. Even thinking about the solution is causing irreparable damage. Like, you have zero time, because every second you take is a week down there for them, and they know when they're on the planet, if they've missed that initial window, which was supposed to be a week or something, they're like, oh shit, if we've missed that week, who knows how long we're going to be down here? Because anything that goes wrong up there, even if it takes an hour, means the rest of our lives are down here. And that's insane.
It really is. And it's a fun part to think about for the show. And I do have some questions. The place where they are on the planet, is this something that you are familiar with? Is it also a reference like the crater or the abandoned house or the village or the creatures, the Andorians?
No, they weren't Andorians. I can't remember what they're called, but they have like horns. But I didn't recognize the planet, the aliens,
so this is
the
new
crater. Yeah, I think the crater was Data's shuttle that crashed into the planet.
I understood that, but I thought, is this all kind of a reference? Because they said when they were in orbit, Captain Freeman looked over and said, oh, well, before we take care of the rift, well, looks like we got to go to the purple planet because something was left behind. So I didn't know if that was part of a reference.
I don't think so. It wasn't.
Because I kind of thought maybe sort of like in episode one, season one of Lower Decks, I think it starts off with the premise that they're going right after first contact to clean up a mess.
Yeah, usually.
And the idea that it's going in after an episode that we've seen of Star Trek, and then Lower Decks is kind of showing the opposite. Like, here's what happened behind the scenes.
Yes.
So I didn't know if that was happening in this episode where they had left something behind and da 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 da.
No, they just, they're trying to heal. So I think an A-team has helped the Enterprise D get back to where they're supposed to be. And then the Cerritos is sent in to close the rift because they're annoyed that they missed the Enterprise D. So they're closing the rift, and as they're closing it, they realize, oh, there's a Federation signature on this planet that everyone else has missed. We have to go and deal with that. Yeah.
Yes, 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 yes. Cool. I didn't know if that was a reference.
No.
But that was fun to watch. So. It's fun to watch what the civilizations look like, you know, with even Dr. Ta'ana.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Being like, y'all are gonna smell like shit.
I'm this is beneath me. Like, I'm a doctor, not whatever the fuck this is.
Yeah, I send that. We'll get to that, I guess, if I can remember. But they go down to this planet, and then they have all of the words for money or whatever. And there's one guy that's super suspicious of them and is
right, of course,
the whole time.
There is in Time's Arrow. There is in Carbon Creek. There is in Blink of an Eye. There's always some local that is somehow tapped into the idea that you're from the future. I fucking know it. You guys are fucking aliens.
Yeah. You don't
somehow
even have
they just
money.
Know.
That's weird.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so they end up taking over this abandoned house and turning into agriculture and then like an entrepreneurial geniuses.
Love that.
In conjunction with finding Data's head and figuring out how to turn it on because they have enough time to do that.
They sure
do. I did like that. And of course, Mariner is trying to figure out how to live a lifetime since she has the option to and then becomes a criminal instead.
Well, that's the other episode name check is the Inner Light. And we've mentioned this a few times. This is when Picard lives an entire life inside of a probe and gets his flute at the end of it. And she's like, I want this to be my inner light. This is going to be my probe life, which doesn't make sense because time is still passing for her, whereas it didn't for Captain Picard. Like, she's still aging, so she's not going to have an entire life here and then get to repeat her life on the Cerritos. If she's an old lady on the planet, she's an old lady when the Cerritos picks her up. But I did love that this is the perfect opportunity to put her in jail and actually like make her pay for the consequence. Because basically the entire year that she's on the planet, she's in jail because she fucks up, yeah. Which is just genius. It's so funny.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah, she's in there for like months at a time.
Yeah.
Because she does, she assaults someone. She turns off a sacred flame and I don't remember what else she did. I think that was the main two things
poked
she did.
Yeah, she poked a guy in the eye and then, yeah, extinguished the sacred flame and that put her in jail for basically the duration. I'm kind of amazed that Tendi and Talin don't try and break her out at some point.
They all seem to be completely content to live individual experiences, yeah. Which is wild to
super
me.
Chill to just be, that's where they're going to live.
And likely very, very sinful if you think about it.
Very sinful. We will definitely be getting to that. The heart of the episode is Tendi and Talin competing for the promotion to be senior science officer, although Talin doesn't realize that she's competing. Did you like the heart of this episode? Each episode has kind of had a emotional theme that they're trying to get through. How did this one hit you, or was it a bit skippable?
I think because I'm so tired of their communication disorder, it angers me.
Yeah.
And I do know people in my real life who will avoid emotional conversations or conversations that may make them feel like they're struggling. So, and like, for example, in this episode, you have Tendi who is wanting a promotion. She wants to be the one who deserves a promotion. And then she gets very competitive and isolates herself and goes a little and gets stupid.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I can look back on my personal experiences with the humans around me and go, yeah, I think maybe I've met some people that don't want to admit when they're in over their head or get competitive and isolate because they're wanting to beat somebody. So like maybe I've seen that, but for some reason I hold these characters in this different space where
yeah.
I don't give them the same excuses that I would give my human friends around me or whatever, yeah. Which is like, get your shit together and just say something. This is somebody that's like, Talin is your friend. But I think Tendi has been shown to be this sort of manic in other episodes. Mm-hmm. And she's finally back on the Cerritos and she's trying to make sure that her dreams come true and that she becomes the person that she wants to become. But she's always also portrayed as someone who's just happy to be there and she's having a good time and she's wanting to represent her race really well. And she's still hard on herself, but usually not to the point of, I don't know, maybe I'm wrong. Has she been willing to sacrifice friendships like this before too? I don't know.
I don't know that she's sacrificing a friendship more than she, I think the message is that she's unhealthily comparing herself to Lynn without realizing that to Lynn also has her downsides. Like when you're like competing, you kind of see all of the things in your competitor that you wish you could be. And like a personality like Tendi is like, I'm not going to get it because I'm not good enough. Here's why this person is better. So she's trying to match that by not sleeping, coming up with a better experiment, doing something more impressive. So I think her own worst enemy is herself because she's not,
of course,
in her head as good as Talin.
And I get that. But there's this tipping point for me when she suddenly says, oh, of course, I can't sleep anymore. I have to push myself even harder. And maybe that's the warrior part of her. I don't know. But I hated it. I hated that part so much because, again, it's just if you just talk to each other,
yeah,
then it's all solved.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe communication comes easy for some people. For me, I love communication. Sometimes it's really difficult to do that. Sometimes it's hard to say what you really feel because you know it's going to hurt somebody or whatever. And there's reasons that you don't want to be honest and open and you want to be like closed off and have some solitude. And sometimes it's healthy to have space like that. But in this situation, you're just watching from the outside going, okay, where they're just going to be, it's clear Tillin has no idea that they're in a competition. How is that not clear to Tendi?
Yeah. The difference is here, we're not really given a reason for why Tendi isn't communicating and why she isn't talking. And Link in the live chat has made a point that I completely agree with. This feels a bit jarring because we do hold Starfleet to a higher standard. The point is, like, in this utopia, we think that we've kind of evolved past this kind of stuff. And it's still important to explore that part of the human equation. But it's a little bit jarring when we're like, in Starfleet, we assume that you communicate and you talk and that it is the best person for the job and kind of like a little bit more objective about it. And Tendi kind of gets there because she is like, well, Tillin should be. She should get the job because she is better than me. But it's frustrating because she's missing some like crucial bits of the puzzle that we think maybe she should have. So yeah, I agree. It was a little bit frustrating for me as well. It's hard when so many episodes have just been, hey, communicate. Like that solves so many of the issues of these episodes.
All they had to do was have Freeman say something like, I'd love to see you both do a research project so that I can see how you both approach your work. Then everything else makes sense because Freeman would have been asking for some kind of evidence or proof of an experiment. And then they just so happened to go to this planet. And then because they're at this planet, they have this time, they're like, okay, well, I guess we'll just do our stuff. And then there's just like this competitive, you know, this competitive nature to use this free time essentially to do a really incredible research project. And I can maybe believe that she'd get like a little bit, you know, batshit about it.
Then I would sin Freeman for putting the position just on one science experiment. It should be like a collective.
Well, I'm not saying it to put it on one. I'm saying to just have more information. Like, how do you approach? Just
yeah,
to
as give an me example.
More information so that I can make this job.
Yeah, I guess just, that would you know, make the episode thing. Make a bit more sense. Yeah.
At least it would be like, oh, I now understand the competitive part. But instead it's like, oh, Tendi is delusional.
Yeah, it seems like it. And that's frustrating, isn't it? It's hard to root for her when
it is hard.
She's
especially because she just left this huge world where if she was being this kind of competitive and delusional, she had like an entire world that was at her fingertips. And so it just doesn't seem like it would be wise for her to just believe so much of her own head that she wouldn't stop and check in.
Yeah.
And it also is, it's hard to believe that anybody wouldn't be checking in more, but yeah. I guess if Tendi is kind of like holding herself up in a attic somewhere, maybe it's not as easy for Mariner or Tillin to kind of, you know, get through. But the other thing, besides potentially like, you know, Captain Freeman giving them a reason or whatever, the other thing that bothers me is that the switch over from zero communication and entire competitiveness to, I'm so sorry, I was in the wrong the whole time. The switch over is, now they've been captured. Now they're being held captive and that's it. Like that's the big thing that stops her is, oh, I have like, oh, we might be breaking the prime directive. I guess now is a good time to reflect on my behavior.
There's the, and again, because they've only got 20 minutes to do it. So it when you tackle something like that, it's so easy to go the quick resolution in the last 20 seconds thing. And it's a bit tiring when that desperation gets resolved so quickly at the end of every episode. Yeah, mm-hmm. I share your frustration with that.
So to answer your question, it didn't work for me and it was frustrating for me. But they got to do what they got to do. They split everybody up. They split up the party. And every time we get back over to Tillin, it was fun to see her success. Yes. I enjoyed that part of it.
So it's again, there's a world where like you have them rooting for each other and working together. And I know conflict is fun, but it's got to be done in a way that feels right. And yeah, the more I think about it, the more the Tendi desperation wasn't really fun to watch. The thing that really saves it is Data being there as counsel that she's ignoring, but still he's there trying to talk sense to her.
Yeah. And what was, well, the only thing that actually saves in this episode is Tillin's ability to buy Mariner out of jail.
Yeah, because
it wasn't even Data. Rich. Yeah, because Data's like, what are you doing? You need to sleep. And Tendi's not listening until they are conveniently left alone in the attic by the Mr. Snoops. And he goes off to get the mob and come back. Had he not done that, the whole thing ends and shifts differently. Like, what a convenient thing that he's like, I'm going to leave you up in this attic, be right back, you know, instead of, I don't know, maybe it seems like he just wanted everybody to believe him, but just take the head and go, you know, there's so many different ways that could have ended more logically. But the only reason that we have a solution is because Tilin was able to take her wealth and go buy Mariner out of jail.
Yay, capitalism.
So, I really like the Tilin stuff. I keep thinking about that being something I really, really enjoyed, like the whole agriculture part, you know, and this empire that she was building of hair product. And think about the collapse afterwards.
I have so many sins about the entire Tilin logic of this episode. But again, the voice work for Tilin is so fun. She's such a great Vulcan. What I really love is that Tilin was in this episode being a foil for Tendi. I just didn't enjoy Tendi's side of it. I think that's where we're at. Anything else before we move into some sins?
Did you like Talin's algorithmic tossing?
Oh my gosh, that made me laugh so, so much. I didn't realize you could juggle. Neither did I until I started. You did great.
It's just algorithmic tossing.
It's so true. It's so true. Like, of the things to like instinctually be able to do, it makes sense that a Vulcan would just be good at juggling. Because this muscle does that and there's a pattern to it. That's so funny.
Did you like the flute playing at the end, the soap flute?
The soap flute. You cannot play that. I love how matter of fact Tilin is. You cannot play that instrument. Yes, I can.
The idea that it's like a prison soap flute.
I just think that would be like disgusting on the lips. I don't want to put prison soap in my mouth. That's the biggest sin of the episode, I think.
It reminds me of watching those like little brief documentaries about hotel soaps and how they recycle the hotel soaps into new soaps.
I don't believe it. Okay. I don't believe that they do that, Danae.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
I will not send you the video.
I do not believe that they recycle the soap. Mm-hmm. Nope. Mm-hmm. There were two lines that I really, really liked. when Mariner is annoyed that she hasn't seen the purple Enterprise D. I wonder if the carpets match the bulkhead.
Yeah. That was a lot.
That was so funny.
That was a lot.
That was so great. I can't believe you just sexualized the Enterprise D like that. That was amazing. Which is interesting because the Enterprise D did have purple carpet. So it's not just a joke for the sake of being rude. It makes, she's also just asking, hey, I wonder if they kept the purple carpet. I wonder if they did that.
Yeah.
Completely innocent.
Completely innocent. Just like the melons and the size of the melons.
Yep. The other line that was, again, completely innocent was when Data is chomping through the rope.
With Worf's reference?
Well, Worf's reference was amazing that he'd seen.
I saw Worf do this once.
And I can imagine Worf doing that. But the line is from Tendi, who says, oh, you really are fully functional. And that's a reference to Tasha, who asks Data, I've heard that you're fully functional. And he says, I am fully functional in multiple techniques. A vast variety of pleasuring.
Yes. He can tie a cherry stem in his mouth easily.
She and Tendi is impressed. And after a year, I think there's more than one time that Data's head has been turned off while Tendi was turned on. Anything else?
Ambassador. Nope.
Oh, golly. With that, Pips.
Oh.
You thought I forgot. So did I.
I think I give it 3.
Yeah, I'm going to give it 3.5. I love this episode. You could skip the Tendi bits, but I really, really enjoyed it. 3.5 Pips for me. Time travel. I'm a sucker for time travel and Data. With that, it's time to head to engineering to do some sinning. Do to me, Matt. Red alert, everyone.
Warning. Warp core collapse in 10 seconds.
Red alarm.
This is the part of the show where we re-engage our sin brains, remind ourselves that no TV shows without sin, even our beloved Star Trek. You said you had quite a few this week. Go for it, Ambassador.
Yeah, well, I'm comparing myself to the past, so I'm going to start with, I did not like that the doctor, T'Ana, said that she didn't go to Starfleet Medical for this. I call bullshit. There are so many times that Starfleet has to be able to change and alter their appearance to do various things.
Yeah.
And so there's absolutely no way that there's not a specific course for the medical wing of things, or at least some sort of continuing education thing that you do, like where you learn a new
When you find a new species, you've got to learn how to... Like, it's part of the job. It might not be her favorite bit, but, like, you knew going into Starfleet, you're going to do a lot of these shenanigans.
Yeah, exactly. So some people, like, become surgeons, and some people, you know, go into these different specialties. In Starfleet, obviously, you're going to go to triage and, you know, learn about how to address all of the things that can happen on a spaceship with warp cores doing things and steam leaks and all the stuff that's going to happen on a ship. But then you also have to serve the people, like looking up into diseases that you can find or parasites that you can come across. And one of the things that always happens is that you have to change your appearance. So I absolutely do not believe that that would be something that she didn't sign up for.
I think you literally, the fact that you signed up for Starfleet means that you did by definition sign up for that. So yeah, completely agree. I'm going to jump straight into a very specific one. I don't think that Mariner should know the Carbon Creek reference that she mentions. So she says about she's going to like find some buddy or someone. Oh no, she may be talking about there's always like somebody creepy that's sniffing around. It's like got Carbon Creek vibes. Carbon Creek was from Enterprise, the one of the few series that we haven't watched yet any episodes from. And T'Pol, who is a Vulcan science officer, is told to share a story. And she shares a story of her, I think, great-grandmother or grandmother who visited Earth after her shuttle crashed with someone else. They landed in Carbon Creek, had to live out a good chunk of their, like, I think it was like a few years or something that they had to stay there before they were rescued. And she, to make money, showed them Velcro. And so the invention of Velcro is put down to Vulcans. However, it's a secret. And Captain Archer is like, I don't believe you. Eventually they believe her, but it's a super duper secret. That doesn't like get entered into the history books. That's a story that's told around the dinner table that they're still kind of like, it ends on a bit of a question mark about whether T'Pol was making it up or not from the viewpoint of the captain and the commander. They're both like, I don't know if we completely believe you. So I don't know. Again, it's one of these, Mariner says an episode title, then I'm like, would you know that? Would you know this happened, considering we don't know that it happened?
That's great. I would have never been able to send that because I don't know what you're talking about.
I love that. I don't know. It's interesting.
Instead, my next sin is just go use another zip around transporter room. Just go elsewhere. Split the party. Okay, one person stay and try to ungoop your console. The other person run to the next console. Go quickly. There are other places that you can beam people, right? Like, there's not one for the entire fucking ship. Am I wrong about that? I
mean, there must be one transporter room on the Cerritos. That is the only explanation. There is no... Knowing what's at stake, you have to just say, transporter room 2. We need you to beam them up or send the signal. Like, you should have, like, redundancies. Because this happened... Obviously, in Voyager, even if you don't spill a tequila or whatever it is over the panel, if there's a random like malfunction that happens, have another transporter room on standby so that they're not stuck down there for a year. Like, it just must be canon that there's only one transporter room on the Cerritos. That's crazy.
It is crazy. I don't understand how to, like, I can't comprehend it, but okay.
It's so like, it makes me like think bad things about Boimler and Rutherford. Because they're just like, how little do you value your friends if you would rather cover your own backs, clean this up, and then beam them back, rather than call another transporter room? It's crazy. 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 Completely agree.
It's crazy.
I couldn't get past how distracting it was that Mariner looked like a Simpson. With yellow skin and blue hair, she looked like Lisa.
Oh.
Or Marge. Uh-huh. I guess it's Marge, really. Maggie doesn't have blue hair. But I got massive Simpson vibes, and I couldn't unsee it. We crossed over the Simpsons. What's going on here?
I don't believe for one second that Mariner would be extinguishing the eternal flame. It was very evident it wasn't just a fire. And
yeah,
in this episode, they really like just decided to revert Mariner back to Chaos Beast.
Yeah.
And if her storyline for this time dilation world where every one second is a week and she is just fully giving into that and just throwing care to the wind, and she like, maybe I can believe that she'd be like, you know what, I'm gonna go full chaos here. But that wasn't what she said. Like, her goal was to start a family and like become a member of society. Yeah. And so I just don't like, if she had said, I'm going to cause chaos and I'm going to be a chaos beast and I'm going to do all this kind of shit. Like that is what a chaos beast would do, is go run over to the very clear fire in a very clear forge area.
Mm-hmm.
That is very clearly, it wasn't a fire that was on the street.
An established fire. That was not a random blaze that had got out of hand.
No. It was very, very clearly a designated fire area. It was a fire pit. There was nothing there. Anyway, it really bothered me because it made me go, oh, that's just Mariner. But this season is trying to say, oh, that's not Mariner anymore. So
yeah, she's grown.
They want to have it both ways, to have the silly line about extinguishing the eternal flame and who believes in dark spirits anyway. Well, they did it for that line, you know?
Well, as soon as she said, oh, there's a fire, I was like, oh, the punchline is that she's back in jail. Smash cut to a door being closed. Yeah. So when you can see the punchline that far ahead, you know that it's all set up and no sausage.
Yeah.
My next one, Tendi would be excellent at Cinema Sins, because Tendi mentions that, like, shouldn't we just turn around, because any debris that's been down here, by the time we were beamed down, has been here for years. So if they're going to find it, and I get that they still have to go and get it, but they're kind of right. Like, it's been years from them scanning it to getting there, getting like the makeup put on them. Like, you've got to have a different set of protocols in place, because I don't think they were prepared to deal with what happened had they already found the technology. They're very lucky that nobody found this crater with Data's head and everything like that, considering how much time will have passed between the crash. Because the crash has happened ages ago, because they're only just scanning. They didn't scan the crash. They scanned what was left over. So the shuttle has been down there for maybe decades. So it's kind of wild that they did just send three people down to deal with this, considering how lucky they have to be that it hasn't been found yet.
Yeah. When they're leaving the house, how was Data powered underneath the cloak?
Yeah. I wondered that as well. And I'm guessing he has an internal power source that can be charged up, that ran out of charge. I don't, because his head does work on its own, because like we said in the episode, Riker takes his head. So I think it has a limited power source that Tendi was able to charge up.
She did say something like, now I won't have to put the crank on, but that doesn't explain how he can now be powered freely. But
yeah,
they didn't really explain that. So I'm going to send it.
That's fair. Absolutely fair. My biggest one of the episode is the Prime Directive once again. And this is as misunderstood as the butterfly effect. People assume that if you go back in time and avoid the butterflies, you won't affect the timeline. You being there, disrupting the wind that you're currently inhaling, stepping on the blade of grass, is affecting that's already happened. When Talin is just like, all I did was make a beauty product and I became rich, therefore I'm not disturbing the Prime Directive. You're destabilizing an economy by repositioning funds that would have gone somewhere else but are now in your pocket and have now been put into the prison system to free Mariner. It is underestimating how much damage beauty products does. You created an entire industry that you said didn't exist, because you're like, now they feel good about themselves, not realizing the harm that beauty products do and probably don't make you feel good about yourself, could be argued. And just like, she's opened a shop. You have violated the Prime Directive by not hiding in a tree or like dying immediately. Like,
right.
Any way that you contribute, anyone that you talk to, like, how do you know that they would have found a lotion for skincare ever? Like, just because it isn't, this is technology. This is still technology. Mm-hmm. However you want to pitch it. All right. It's not medicine. It's not alcohol. It's crazy. Like, how she doesn't realize that this is a massive violation of the Prime Directive.
I want to go back to this world and in a future episode of something. And then, like, there was this massive mystery that they have to solve because everything imploded. All of the huge fruits, foods, and vegetables that she was using to feed people,
everyone
gone.
Became obese. Or there was a big famine, one of the two.
There is a war because there's only so many bottles remaining of the special product.
Yes.
And so it has become this, like, coveted material that people will kill over. Yeah, I think it'd be really interesting.
I mean, when you create an entire industry around beauty products, that's how you get invaded by Kardashians.
I feel like sometimes your great jokes just
let's go.
Like I have to believe in this moment that out there in the world, when someone listens to this podcast episode, they're like, "I see what you did there, Captain." Because I'm just like, "Oh, let's go." Well, and the fact that you're like celebrating it yourself so much tells me that I'm missing out on something. So
Kardashian, you know, Keeping Up with the Kardashians, the TV show.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And then Kardashians, it sounds similar.
It wasn't even a Star Trek reference.
No, it was because Kardashians sounds like Kardashians.
Okay.
So you get invaded by Cardassians, and Cardassians invade Bajor for natural resources, and the Cardassians would invade to take over the beauty products. It's so good. It's such a great joke for the 10 people that both know the Cardassians and the Cardassians.
Do we only have 10 people that listen to our podcast?
No, I mean the crossover, the Venn diagram of people that will appreciate both things.
Oh, I see.
Beauty products break the Prime Directive. Anything else, Ambassador?
No, I don't think so.
My last one wasn't huge, but it was, they don't have a lot of time to get away before getting beamed up. And instead of like finding a cupboard to hide in, they try to hike up a wide open mountain with sight lines. You know where you don't want to be when you're trying to hide? High ground. Like, you have so many sight lines. Like, people can just see, you can see that fucking tree from the center of town. Like, you're hide in a hole. You want to go down. You want to hide in a basement somewhere. You don't need to go to a peak to hide and get beamed out. That was just bad transporting 101.
There you go.
Amazing. Ambassador, anything else before we wrap up?
I think the chat had some good ones, so I will do a rapid fire sins in the outtakes.
Oh, I did have one that I didn't mention the food in the transporter room because they sin it themselves so much.
Right.
It's still a sin that they do it regardless, but they mention that rule so many times because they know this really shouldn't have happened. Like, this accident should never have been a thing, but...
Well, I mean, there should never be a console that can't have anything on it. Like, those consoles should be made out of materials that cannot be so easily fucked up from anything.
Well, I always assumed they were.
That's one of the most important parts of what you do. So to build a console that can fuck up that terribly because you've spilled a little juice on it, that's another sin for me. Is just that's so stupid.
Yeah, it was a lot. I assumed the L-cars displays were very, very waterproof. It just looks like a sheet of glass. Like, that shouldn't be, that should not have been an issue. Completely agree. Well, next week, the episode that we will be covering is Star Trek Lower Decks, Season 5, Episode 8. And this one, Danae, is called Upper Decks. Any predictions? I have two.
Okay. Two predictions, go.
My first one is that this will be just following the A-Team. This will be a completely Freeman, Ransom, Shax.
Yeah,
A-Team. This is going to be as if it was an episode of TNG. Just completely normal.
Okay.
My second prediction is that it's going to bring all of the characters back from the TNG episode Lower Decks now that they've been promoted, because this is like 15 years after that episode. So where are the Lower Deckers from that episode now? One of them's dead, but where are the ones that are still alive?
Interesting. Okay.
That's my two predictions.
I predict I will be bored watching this episode.
Interesting. You don't have high hopes for this one based on the title.
I just want to see my people.
You might still. There might just be, I may be way off with that one.
I just thought of another sin.
Do it.
How has no one got Boimler in trouble about this pad that he has?
Yeah, they haven't reported it, have they?
It's like a bright red. I mean, that was part of the joke is, oh, it's too wide. Oh, it's beveled. And he's like, it's red. And so there's so many people that should see that he is doing something that isn't okay. How has no one?
Yeah. Freeman should be putting some pieces together. Just poor management once again.
Like, if he was hiding, it's one thing. It's like his whoobie. It's constantly with him. I love the idea of him finding this playbook of how to become this version of himself and how... It's like last episode, you know, how it was just really messing with him. I loved how that played into that. But I'm saying last episode during this episode, I just realized because I watched them both really close together.
We didn't get your sins last week, so I think that's fair.
No, no, no. I guess it was kind of in this episode because that's why they were having that drink.
Yeah, and Tendy mentioned
it. Because they were both looking at that pet.
Tendy mentioned it. Mariner was annoyed about it all. Yeah, stealing someone else's vibe.
And Rutherford's in on it. Yeah.
They should all get into trouble for this pad, for sure. I agree. They really should. That's got to be violating some kind of directives.
Yeah. So many violations.
Well, with that, if you would like to get in touch with us and send us any emails, questions, anything you like, send us a message, captainspod@cinemasins.com. Join our lovely Discord, discord.gg/cinemasins, and join the Captain's Pod channel where we have spoiler chats, episode chats, and any updates about the live show. If you want to join us on the live show, we post in Discord, and you can see when it's scheduled on the CSPN channel on the YouTube live section. I think that's... Is there anything else to plug, Ambassador? Join the Sin Club on Patreon, and you get the episodes a day early.
Oh, that's true.
You get that.
Plus other fun CinemaSins things, like if you've ever wanted to hear Jeremy's bloopers... From the content on YouTube. You can find that stuff there, yeah.
He often swears at the writers that make him say long words that are invented. More swearing from Jeremy. Until next week, I'm Captain Ian, and I don't need sleep. I need science.
Oh, and I am fresh out of globbers.
Live long and prosper.
Thanks for listening. Want to connect with the show? Our hailing frequencies are always open through captainspod@cinemasins.com. Like, comment, and subscribe on your podcast player of choice, and be sure to visit cinemasins.com.
Welcome to 10 Forward, the part of the show of the...
What? What part of the show of the...
What was that?
What is happening?
That was so weird. I didn't even change this bit.
Wow.
Welcome to...
Wow. Do you need a second?
Well, there we go.
Oh my God, you're broken. He's never going to be able to do that show again.
First
time. Hi, I'm Babs. I guess I'll be here captain for today.
No, you can't pilot the ship, Babs.
When Ian says bollocks, it sounds okay. When I say balls, it sounds inappropriate.
When Americans can't say bollocks... It's one of the swear words you guys cannot, for some reason, wrap your tongues around.
Bollocks.
Bollocks. Boll. Boll.
Bollocks.
Not bollocks.
Bollocks.
Boll.
Boll.
No, boll.
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 Boll, I'm saying.
No, you're not. Boll.
Yeah, boll.
As in bolognese.
Bolognese.
There we go. Boll.
Boll.
Bollocks.
Boll. Sci-Fi says maybe that one particular transporter was configured specifically for the beacon or to compensate for the time dilation, so it would take them too long to do that in another transporter.
But this is what I'm saying. You have two ready to go because this exact problem has already happened. So you program more than one transporter to be able to do this job. Because Voyager, you're repeating the same mistakes as Voyager. What I hope is that when this stuff happens on another ship, at the very least... You make a rule so that ridiculousness doesn't happen again.
What dictated how long to wait after transmitting the signal to the necklace to then beam them up? Yep.
Well, no, it was like immediate because 1 second is
It wasn't immediate.
What do you mean?
Oh, down there on the world, I think.
It was press the button and then energize because even if
you let... It would have taken a second, which is a week.
If you let half a second pass, that's 3 days.
So they get the signal, then they have a week.
Less than that, I think. They have like a day because it's like, beep, beam up. Like he doesn't even wait a second before beaming them up. It's like you have a few hours to get somewhere safe.
Yeah, that's still a little bit nebulous. I think they should do that and then a week. But because how else are you going to be sure?
But what time of day in the week? What on that day, what time of day
go
is
to a
it?
Cave, to your point.
For
go
an
to
entire
a cave.
Week? I guess for the
no,
whole
for
day.
For at least the last day.
Yeah, just live in a cave for a day. Yeah.
I mean, you're right. Maybe it was less than a week of time that had passed. But the whole point is like, how do you take a week and fraction it down into the seconds to make it a day?
Well, do you know what's great? Computers are very good at doing that. So it should be automated. It should be press the button, then the computer exactly beams up. Because computers are great at doing that. Mm-hmm. Kind of why we have them.
Sent from Link. What happens to all of the notes and experiments that Tendi and Talin made when they were on the planet? They're left behind to be found.
Yeah, great point. I don't remember them shredding great them. Great sin. Because they kind of left in a hurry, didn't they?
So I decided to watch a random episode of Catfish while I was getting everything ready and coming in here. I haven't done that in a long time.
Okay.
And in this episode, it goes to fists.
Oh, no.
I've never seen that before.
Between the catfish and the catfishy?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Because it's like a super, super dramatic episode. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Like the craziest stuff is happening right now. So like this one guy, he's with this guy for 5 years. They're even raising children together. But like he's despondent and not interested. And so the main guy, he's like, you know what? I'm going to go ahead and just look for friendship elsewhere. He starts talking with this person online named Adonis, who he is the catfish. And so fast forward a year. Our guy's like, I'm going to end this relationship. This isn't healthy. And so he breaks up with his man, Antonio.
Okay.
And everybody is shocked, surprised, and upset.
The one he has a kid with?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because he's never met Adonis, ever.
And how long has that been going on?
Like a year.
Oh, no.
And this guy, I can't remember his name, but this guy, he's like a little puppy. He's like, well, maybe no, it's been a bad day, but he's been there for me. He's been there through me for a lot of difficult times and blah, blah, blah. And so I'm hoping that it's who it says. Cammy, they're like, oh God. Anyway, so yeah, of course he's being catfished and Adonis isn't who he thinks, but they're in this really small town. And so when Catfish shows up, everybody knows about it. And everybody knows about the big breakup. And so they're like, there's this one guy who even posts about it on Facebook. And so when they're trying to figure out, well, is it this guy that's maybe catfishing him? There's this post about like, Catfish is in town. Catfish is in town. Neve and Cam, they go over to the house to interview the guy for the next, like, hey, here's what we found on the internet. Yeah. You know, the whole interview process. Two people come over and interrupt the interview because they're like, is that Catfish in there? Are you the one that's being catfished?
Oh,
they're just
no.
like really like just intense. It's just really intense. And the second person that shows up is Antonio, the ex-man, not really husband, but the ex-man, because he's Adonis.
Oh, he catfished his own boyfriend.
He catfishes his own boyfriend.
Oh, no.
And as soon as he goes, you would leave me for somebody that you haven't even met for a year? And the guy's like, hell yeah, I would. And the guy goes, oh yeah, well, I'm Adonis, bitch, or whatever he says. And our guy just leaps on him and starts pounding his ass.
Oh, no.
And I'm like, oh, my God. I got to go because it's time to do Captain's Pod. But, oh, my God, it's like right now they're going to blows and they're calling for security right before they cut to commercial.
Yeah. Man, he let that go on for a year.
A year.
Yeah, I think after like a month, I'd be like, call him on the carpet and just be like, I know what you've been doing. If you're not happy with me. It says so much, though, that
fucking bonkers.
He is happy with Adonis, who is still his boyfriend.
His partner.
It's in our heads.
And he was accusing his partner of being like emotionally unavailable to him. But then Adonis is like super available to him.
That's manipulative as fuck. Everyone is a bad person in that situation.
The ones that are really, really weird, and these are fun to watch if you've ever, like, are the episodes where there's a group of friends that decides to pretend that there's a catfish situation just so they can get Neve and Cam to come to their town.
Oh, that sucks.
And so they actually get the entire production team, like they send a fake email, they stage the whole thing, and then Neve is like, something's not right. And they end up sniffing it out.
Usually,
he's been doing it so long. He's like, this isn't right. Something's not right. And he's like, okay, guys, come out with it. What's going on? They're like, okay, well, it was his idea or it was her idea. And then that just the whole thing unravels. And he's like, God damn it. So then they're catfished.
But guess what? Don't put it on fucking TV. Don't encourage
them. But that's
the
thing.
Don't encourage them.
But then these people are forever like on TV. And some of the catfishes have become famous for catfishing.
Oh,
and they're like,
you're the problem, Danae. You're watching this show. You're encouraging them by watching. I did tell them about a chihuahua that you decided not to rescue?
Oh, it wasn't a chihuahua.
A beagle.
It was a hound.
Yeah,
yeah, it was like a hound dog, like a beagle. And it wasn't that I decided not to rescue. It's that I made many attempts and I failed.
Oh, I told that story as you decided not to rescue it this time.
Well, I guess you don't know me that well.
No, that's not how I told the story. Jonathan was not surprised at all. He was like, oh yeah, she does that all the time.
I really do. A situation where I really didn't have any time I shouldn't have spent the time doing anything other than work.
Yeah.
But when there is a life at risk, I think, okay, work can wait. Yeah. I left the rescuing to the very capable hands of the police officer, who seemed annoyed.
That you were helping?
No, that I was leaving.
Oh.
I was like, you know what? This is somebody who, you know, we pay to serve the community, and mm-hmm, so mm-hmm. by you do your job and yeah. do the thing.
Don't get mad at me.
He pulled over, and I'm going to read into this a bit.
Okay.
When he pulled over to see why I was parking in the middle of the road and had my hazards on and stuff, probably to investigate and help, like, he saw the dog, he turned down the road the dog was walking down, and then he pulled over, came out of the car and was sort of walking alongside the dog as it was, you know, adventuring around in people's yards and such. And then whenever I got closer, he said, "Is this your dog? I can help you get to your dog." And I was like, "Oh, no, it's not my dog." And he just goes,
This suddenly became a bigger problem.
Yeah, I think he assumed, understandably,
yeah.
that I was attempting to get my dog. So he thought, I will help her dog into her vehicle. But then it was this big, you know, nebulous situation. Now it's just a him situation. Problem. Yeah. Clean the World collects soap bars from various hotel locations and refines them into noodles to create new sanitized soap bars. No. Bye!
Don't believe you. I won't include that in the outtakes.
Nope.
Nope.